if you're not seeing the type of return that you would like on your marketing initiatives, you need to go back to branding, which is really, who am I serving? What pain and challenge are they really grappling with, and how is it impacting them psychologically? And then how do I speak to that?
You're listening to Be That Lawyer, life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Each episode, your host, author, and lawyer coach, Steve Fritzen, will take a deeper dive, helping you grow your law practice in less time with greater results. Now, here's your host, Steve Fritzen.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the show, Be That Lawyer. My name is Steve Fritzen. If you're a first-time listener, my goal is to help you as a lawyer learn more about branding, marketing, business development, really anything that's going to help you grow your law practice and get value for the time that you invest in this 30-minute show. I have an amazing guest today, Kate LaDon. She's an author. She's the founder of LaDon Brands. It's a personal branding consultancy based in New York City. Kate, how you doing?
Doing well. You know, New York is feeling fall-like this last week, and I'm not sad about that.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's crazy all over. We're still living in the zombie apocalypse and trying to figure out how to get through day to day. But I think, you know, most of us, if we have our jobs and our health, we're probably in a pretty good place.
I can only echo that for sure. It's been a real practice in gratitude, I would say, for me personally, these last couple of months.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And so, of course, as my listeners know, I do a terrible job on giving people's bios. But I always enjoy hearing how other people describe themselves. And you, as a branding expert, no pressure. But do you want to give a little more information about kind of your business, your background?
Absolutely. Sure. So our business, LaDon Brands, really helps two segments and niche categories of folks. One are executives turned authors, business authors. So these are individuals who have run companies for years. They've largely been behind the scenes, and now they are making the leap into being an author and sharing all of that wisdom with a larger audience. They're working with traditional publishers, and we are so excited to be wonderful partners in building up their social media audiences and social media networks to really have a ready-to-buy market. So when the book comes to publication date, they have people who are engaged and excited for their message. So that's definitely one side of the business. And the other, and it's funny because they'll jump back and forth between the two, is certainly professional service providers, of course, attorneys, accountants, those of us who are knowledge workers, we're selling our expertise for a living. We help them find clarity in their personal brand messaging, and then take that messaging to very much do the same thing we do with authors. So build up an engaged following, and then get them, you know, on podcasts as expert commentators in the media, really transfer that online audience into offline purchases and relationships and, you know, business for their firms. So we're very, very lucky to work with a group of individuals who are in every single right, just leading their industries and leading expertise in their industries as well.
Very cool. And is kind of a fun way to start today. Is there something different or interesting you'd like to share about yourself that maybe not everybody knows?
I think a lot of people now know me as a brand marketer for sure and a personal branding expert. But what my family and college friends will still tease me about and say I got my first claim to fame from was I was on a box of ear warmers back when I was 20, which are still in circulation in some Targets and JCPenney's throughout America. And every winter season, I'll get a picture. They're the ear warmers 180s.
I love those.
Right? They wrap around the back of your head.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're pretty not disruptive. And so when I was going to school in Baltimore, that company was actually headquartered in Baltimore, and my agent called me and she was like, hey, we have a great modeling gig for you. You know, can you swing it? And I said, sure. It was my first national campaign. I had no idea what the product was. And then I showed up on set and they were like, just act cold and smile. And I was like, what is going on here? And then months later, somebody called me from a Target and was like, I think you're on a box of ear warmers and I see you everywhere.
Well, that's like the most famous, you know, winter, you know, type of item of clothing that people wear in the cities because they don't want to mess up their hair. and they want to keep their ears warm. So I have to now go online and try to find that picture.
You know, my mother will be the first to send you 5 boxes. I think she collectively bought most of the stock in circulation. Yeah, but every year I make my grand reappearance in a Target by you.
Oh my God, that's great. Very cool. Very cool. Well, that is different and interesting. So you nailed it on that. So let's get into more substantive stuff that hopefully will also be as fun. And that is, you know, what's your kind of general philosophy about branding? So when you talk about branding, you know, when you do presentations, like what's the Reader's Digest version of like, what is it and how is it different than marketing and sales and how does it all fit together?
You know, branding, it's a great question. And thanks, Steve. Everybody very much gets branding and marketing confused. And I get that. And branding is really fundamentally the in-depth knowledge of your target audience. I mean, deep, deep knowledge of who that person is, who that ideal avatar is, and then messaging that aligns with what pains and challenges they're feeling that you're uniquely poised to help them solve. And so marketing then becomes the way that you circulate that message, not to just make it incredibly, you know, reductive or simplified, but it really is that. And so I think a lot of times folks, they'll look at methods, you know, why are the methods we're employing not working and we need to fix the marketing, when 9 times out of 10, I would assert, if you're not seeing the type of return that you would like on your marketing initiatives, you need to go back to branding, which is really, who am I serving? What pain and challenge are they really grappling with? And how is it impacting them psychologically? And then how do I speak to that versus leaning way too much into my expertise and the solution? A lot of people, you know, when you're looking at branding, when you're looking at selling to anybody, people are driven by the following 3 questions. Do I feel seen? Do I feel heard? Do I feel understood? And the more you can spend time with that in your branding, the more you're going to skyrocket past people who overstep that critical deep dive in the beginning and then just go to market. So that's the way I would say most easily explain it to people.
Got it. And so the one that always keeps coming back to me is the commercials for NyQuil, where it's like that, where you see the person on the screen and you could tell they're suffering and it says the achy head, stuffy fever, so you can rest medicine. And sure enough, mm-hmm. when I'm in the grocery store and I'm feeling a certain way or I'm getting something for my wife or something, that's where I'm going to go because the branding just it's sunk into me and I can't let it go. So when I see Robitussin or anybody else, like they're done, like I'm not going that direction. So are there examples of brands that you love or that give a great example of the hear, see, understood type of philosophy?
Okay. Yes. I have one that I am so into. It's not a national brand. So you guys are like, it's not one you would hear the name of and all of you would know. However, it is particularly relevant for the type of industry and field that attorneys are in. So I'm going to give everybody some homework to go look up this brand. It's called Shared Practices, I believe. Let me just get that straight. Shared Practices. And what it is, it's a platform that helps dental practice owners grow a profitable dental practice. And when you look at the wording that they have on their website and the messages that they're sending to their base, it is so spot on. Let me just read you what it says on their homepage in incredibly large text. Oh crap, I have no clue how to run a practice, quote unquote. Then it says, thought by every first-time practice owner. Even if you could remember the one practice management course you took in dental school, how would you know if it's any good? What worked for Dr. Academic in his former practice might not work in yours. Your location, patient base, and clinical philosophy are unique to you, so shouldn't the systems and practice management tools be custom fit as well? I mean, they dive into the deep, dark fear that their audience is feeling right at the top of the fold of their website by saying, oh crap, I have no clue how to run a practice. And when you call out what somebody's challenge, in this case, the challenge is, how am I going to grow a successful dental practice? By really illuminating the worst fear, you know, what do I fear people think is true about me because I can't solve this? you have a customer so quickly. And so I think that brand is a little bit of a, like, nobody really knows this brand, but they're wildly successful in their niche.
Very cool. Yeah. So it's just laying out exactly what the main pain points are of the people that would be coming to the website. And then it draws them right in to say, hey, that's me. They're talking to me.
Right. Like, are you in my diary? Are you in my email at night? How do you know that this thought is going through my head? And so if you wouldn't want to really take it a step further, let's say you're talking about a divorce attorney, right? Let's bring it into the world of law. Of course, the challenge on the surface is, you know, divorce is not something people hopefully have a ton of experience with. And, you know, and so you, the challenge may be for your client, they're trying to get the most equitable, you know, separation they possibly can. They're also going through a world of emotions and they don't know what they don't know about this next phase of their life. But I would assert somewhere underneath of all of that is this fear that they can't help but think that maybe on some level they're a failure, right? There's all these very irrational fears. We have challenges or we make challenges mean about ourselves. And so if you use language like that in your branding or your marketing, you say like, I get it. It feels like on some level you failed, but that's not the case. You know, there's light at the end of this tunnel and we're going to help you with that. You immediately win the trust of a prospect or somebody who's looking at your messaging. And that's the level a lot of people don't get to in branding.
Gotcha. And are there specific mistakes that companies or individuals are making in their branding efforts? And what you said earlier resonated with me, that I'm marketing like a madman or like I've got all this marketing going out, but it's not getting anywhere because I never took the time to really get the branding straight, right? So it's sort of like wasted energy in some cases. So yeah. Are there top three mistakes that companies or individuals make, you know, before they go to market?
For sure. So I think mistake number one, you haven't defined your niche audience well enough. And for firms, this is a practice by practice exercise. Every practice, given, you know, the different experts you have working in that practice, are probably going to have a different niche client or ideal client avatar. But if you don't have an ideal client avatar, I mean, you cannot tell me right off the bat, I work with women, again, to go back to divorce attorneys. I work with women who are between 50 and 60. They're becoming empty nesters with their children leaving the home. They are realizing they're not connected to their partner anymore and they're going through a divorce. And at this point, they built out a considerable amount of wealth that they need to wade through. If you can't tell me that that woman's name is Wendy, she's 50 to 60, she's living in the suburbs, and rattle off everything I just said, you haven't niched your audience down enough. You really need to be able to say it like that. And so I think that is across the board the biggest mistake people make. They're trying to be too broad. And when you talk to everybody, you talk to nobody. Number two, particularly when it comes to knowledge workers or thought leaders, is you're not minding what I like to call the expert gap. And when I say that, you know, you have an advanced degree. If you have been in your profession for even 5 years, you're probably a bona fide expert in the sense of you know way more about your field than other people do. But when we go to market, we're speaking at expert level 10, not remembering that our prospects at best are expert level 1 to 2, if we're really generous. And so I find that a lot of knowledge workers or attorneys, they try and bring that language down and meet the client where they're at, but they're still hitting at maybe a 5 or a 6. The real thing you need to be speaking to are the problems. You know, I think too many people spend way too much time marketing their solutions rather than empathizing with a problem. And so you really need to mind that expert gap. And the quickest way to do that is to know the problems and the beliefs your client has about themselves because of those problems, and then address them. And then number three, I think people, almost like they are with their audiences, are trying to do way too many things in marketing. And as somebody who is involved in marketing, that might be contradictory or seemingly contradictory, but I am really a fan of, you know, focus means follow one course until successful. Just because, you know, firm XYZ down the street from you is on 6 different social platforms and has radio ads and is doing this, does not mean that that is right for you. You need to start and really refine and perfect a marketing channel where you know that niche audience is, and dominate that before you roll it into another marketing channel. And when you do that, you do get the ability to refine that message, to hone that message, and see what works before you start expanding it into other channels. But I just find people are doing way too much and it's causing them burnout. They're not getting an ROI and they really haven't given themselves a chance to see what messaging and formula works the best. So those would be my top three right off the bat.
Okay. And I know that a lawyer that's listening to this is going to be pushing back on the first one about going niche because they're going to say, well, wait a second, I don't want to go so narrow that I give up things. They feel like they're going to lose something by getting specific with it. Can you address that?
Absolutely. You know, I had the same fear. I really did. I started my business as a brand consultant, period. Like the most, I thought it was pretty niche in the sense of I wasn't just a marketing consultant. I was a brand consultant. And it was the same thing. I didn't want to lose opportunities. And then I went a bit more narrow and I just started working with professional service firms. And then I went a bit more narrow and did only personal branding for executives or partners of those firms. And then we started to work with authors. You know, a lot of those partners or executives were writing their first book and they wanted help on refining the messaging around their now author brand. So I say all of this to say, we then got very niche-y within our own company and said, you know what, we're really going to start telling people. And I was sharing with Steve before that we're going through a rebrand right now, that we exclusively work with executives and partners who are transitioning to becoming nonfiction business authors. I mean, talk about a niche. Like, it's not just authors, it's nonfiction business authors coming from a very specific point in their life. You would think I had left so much money on the table. And I have to tell you all, the business has quadrupled since we got narrow in that messaging. It's easier for people to refer you. You get to be really good and formulaic at the things that you're really good at that are in your zone of genius. And you become very, very much a brand. You get higher brand equity. And if you think about all of the brands that are, you know, household names now, they didn't start as broad. They started narrow. You go narrow, you go fast. I think a firm that does this extremely well, and I'll have to, I'm blanking on this, their name, because I thought it was one thing, but there is a firm out in California that exclusively does dog bite cases. A lot of their cases are helping US postal workers with dog bites. I think it's called like Bite Law or Bark Law or something, but talk about a niche brand and they're killing it because they niche down so much.
Yeah, I think that's where most lawyers are headed in the sense that, you know, they're not. My father is a retired lawyer. Many people know, but he was a generalist, and he did a lot of things well, but did fine. But that was in the 70s and the 80s and early 90s. So now it seems like everybody's niching out in labor and employment's, you know, different practice areas, and they're staying within their little practice area. Now, the next question is, so let's say you decide to stay within a practice area, let's say family law, just to make it simple and back to an earlier example. Should you then, you know, we know like in Chicago, there's a guy, you know, Jeffrey Leving, who does father's rights. So he decided to niche out and just say, look, it's not just family law. I want to represent the dads.
Yep.
So is there a reason for people to get even more niche than just selecting a particular practice area?
Yeah, you know, I think a couple of things, and I think it's dependent upon the professional, right? For me, I really took a long, hard look at who is the type of person I just enjoy working with and what lights me up. And it sounds like Jeffrey was his name.
Right.
Jeffrey looked at, you know, maybe he had an experience of I don't know this to be true, of course, but he really saw what was possible when stepping in and helping dads have, you know, more shared custody of their kids or maybe even predominant custody, because he saw people really get, you know, unfairly treated in that regard. I would assert that Jeffrey feels a lot of fulfillment in working with that niche and narrow of an audience and being wildly passionate about it. I feel the same way with working with nonfiction business authors. You know, you really get to become an expert in a niche. And again, I would say that because of that, Jeffrey probably gets more questions, more asks for his expert opinion because he's more defined. And so in my experience, you know, I think that the reason to go even more niche within a niche is because clients will find it easier to refer people to, you know, Jeffrey's clients. Dads hang out with dads, guys hang out with guys. It's easier to sit there and refer other people. For me, again, it just became more of the, well, what work really lights me up? Oh, interesting. I find that within my category, there's a customer profile that I just really enjoy working with. How can I recreate customer X 20 times over? Well, I'm going to be very, very articulate then about who customer X is. And I'm going to say, I'm the person for that. And when you do that, you'll find customer X does get multiplied and your life becomes a lot easier as well.
Yeah. So I think that it's interesting to look at practice areas, to look at maybe certain types of companies that you want to go after, or certain, you know, slivers of what they call vertical markets, right? And things like that. What about trying to come up with some form of differentiator and work around that? So for example, let's say that a law firm is highly responsive and they want to focus on something like that. So that's not targeting a particular group of people, but it's maybe targeting something that you know the audience or the potential prospects want. What would be an example of that? Or what do you think about working around something like that for a brand?
Yeah, I love that. And you know, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said really looking at what a defined audience wants, right? I think the first part of it, again, going back to just being niche, being narrow, knowing and being able to say what the particular nuances of the challenges that defined market feels, then you're really in a position to say, okay, then these would be the things that they appreciate, and we're going to create a brand around that. When I was branding an association for accounting and tax professionals of a state, I was in a leadership session with them, a leadership training session, and the guy who led the session said something that was very, very interesting to me. And he said, you know, you have three focuses and you can only do one of them great and two of them well. And so what is going to be the thing that you do that's really great? And so I think, to your point, you want to look at, okay, what are the three biggest things that this client segment would really, really enjoy, whether that's responsiveness, whether it's, you know, they're millennials. And so we've reoriented the firm to give text updates, do Zoom videos. I mean, it's all of our reality now in a pandemic, but you know, we're orienting around communication that they prefer, perhaps. I would look at those three things and then say, okay, now what is the one thing we're going to do really great? And then the other two things we know we'll just do it well, and we'll brand around the great thing in the messaging when it comes to, you know, somebody considering working with our firm over something else. And so in the case of you're working with millennial clients, let's say maybe it's millennial startup founders and you're a business attorney helping them register things, you know, that unique differentiator of we have millennial teams, you know, we communicate with you in the 24/7 startup cycle that you're used to, whatever that is, really elevate that.
Got it. And so, you know, we've talked about, you know, the pandemic a little bit. And is there something that lawyers, law firms should be doing with regards to their brands in adapting to the COVID-19 and what we consider now the new normal?
Yes. So I think, again, it depends on the practice area that you're in. You know, this COVID-19 is impacting every facet of every person's life in a different way. For family law attorneys, I mean, we've seen divorce rates go up. We saw that in China after they got out of lockdown for business valuation. You know, those attorneys who are helping with valuations, now there's challenges with, okay, well, what is the valuation of a business that's going through a year like this year? And, you know, an economy that is getting rocked a bit. And so you need to know what parts of the pandemic, of course, are impacting your target client in which ways. But what I would say, after you get really clear about that, and I'm sure you all are very clear about that, because the first person we tend to call when we're in trouble is our attorney, is I would put out a lot of content then around that challenge and around that problem on whatever social platform your audience is on. So family law, maybe Facebook, right? you know, business attorneys, LinkedIn. But right now, social media attention is at an all-time high. You need to be out there providing those comforting statements of what people don't know, they don't know about how COVID's impacting them. And you need to be doing it on a platform where your audience is most likely spending time, because right now, if you invest in content creation on those platforms, like a spring, you know, we're all recoiled under pressure now, but then when it lifts, you'll have accumulated so much brand momentum and goodwill in an audience that you're just going to take off. And we're already seeing that with a lot of professional service providers now.
Well, let's wrap up with something that I wanted to know and get your take on. And it's in line with what we're just talking about now with social media posting. It's really around authenticity. I think that's something that's been pushed the last, you know, 5 to 10 years as a key sort of attribute to success in business is how authentic are you and in the messages you're putting out and how you come across. And so now more than ever with everybody being slammed with social media, with everybody slammed with all the different ads and messaging around it, some of it seems kind of fake and some of it seems kind of opportunistic and some of it seems incredibly authentic. So how do we stay authentic, or how do we kind of demonstrate our authenticity during this time?
There is a firm in Baltimore, Offit Kerman, that's doing their, they do it's like a practice area of theirs. I think it's their labor and employment group, but they do a live Zoom video with their attorneys in that practice area. And sometimes there's kids just floating around in the background. You know, they're certainly more dressed down than they would have been at the fancy office in downtown. And it just feels so relatable. You know, they share things that they're going through themselves and homeschooling and things like that. And so you really do feel like, not only am I learning and getting value from what they're sharing about, you know, how do I handle paychecks right now in this time, and how do I handle my employee base, which they're certainly speaking to, but then all of a sudden you see one of their kids, or they're talking to each other about, you know, how we're accommodating two attorneys working at home and kids in school. It becomes quite affable or authentic, or, you know, humbling. And I do think that with all this remote work, one of the more refreshing things that have happened for people is the professional persona and the personal persona, especially with Zoom kids and Zoom calls and kids at home. You know, you can try your best, but, you know, that's always up for a kid sneaking into the background. I think that that's actually done very well for people. It makes you feel relatable and not opportunistic. And a fellow human being going through the same situation as I am, while still being able to provide, you know, guidance in an area that I'm struggling with.
Got it. Well, that's really, really great. And I think everything you've shared today is incredibly helpful to individuals and firms that are trying to be authentic, trying to figure out how to get their brand in line. And I think you might be a great resource for people that are interested in taking things to the next level. So how do people get in touch with you? What's the best way to engage you or to get your content?
Sure. Thanks. LadonBrands.com. For sure. And then I love LinkedIn. You know, I'm not quiet about my infatuation with that platform. I'm probably their number one fan. So definitely, you know, LinkedIn with me, Kate Ladon. I'm pretty active there, as are our clients.
Gotcha. And what's the book? I know that you're an author. What's the book that you wrote?
Yeah, so we really wrote a guide. It's called The Attraction Magnet, The 7 Insider Secrets the World's Largest Brands Use to attract clients. And I wrote it really 5 years ago when I was feeling the crunch of trying to, you know, there's got to be a better way than just killing myself trying to do business development. And so I thought, what if I could really do attraction marketing and figure out how to just bring people to me and bring leads to me? And so it was through my own exploration and challenge that I really wrote this guide that we then went on to utilize that framework. And everybody we work with, whether at the time it was a corporate brand, now personal brands, follow those 7 insider tips. You can get it for free. It's an ebook. It's at the website. Definitely utilize that, especially as we're talking about, you know, growing a really authentic brand. It comments a lot on that.
Perfect. Perfect. I'll grab a copy for myself right when we get off the show. But Kate, just want to thank you again for being my guest and being so open with my audience. I really appreciate you taking some time for us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks, Steve.
Awesome. And hey, everybody, just want to thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's show and that you're one step closer to being that lawyer, someone who's confident, organized, and a skilled rainmaker. Take care, everybody, and be safe.
Thanks for listening to Be That Lawyer, life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Visit Steve's website, Fredson.com, for additional information and to stay up to date on the latest legal business development and marketing trends. For more information and important links about today's episode, check out today's show notes.